Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya Allison, and I will be your host. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put on your AirPods, turn up the volume, and get ready for our guest today, Shirin Orazi. Welcome, Shirin. I am so excited to have you as our guest on the Grin Gets Real podcast. I said that I'm excited, but I am overly excited. Just the thought of talking behavior science and then also how it's connected to marketing is just kind of fun. It's the little data geek in me as well, too. Thank you for joining us.
Of course, my pleasure. I'm really, really excited to be joining you in the conversation today, Kathy.
Great. Now, let's start off with sharing a little bit about yourself and then also about Next Step.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll share the little bit story behind my bio because I find that's what you can't really find on the internet. I started off my career as an engineer. So I did the whole geeky engineering thing, worked in tech for a number of years. And I quickly realized that I wasn't having a whole lot of fun. I think if you know me for more than 2 minutes, you know I'm a bit of an extrovert. And so being stuck in a cubicle designing chips was not really my calling. So I started Next Step, and we were largely a digital design agency for a number of years. And it wasn't until a number of years ago where I discovered behavioral science. So the story behind it is at the time I was dating my now husband. And he was running a series of sleep medicine clinics, and they had close to an 80% adherence rate to these like really difficult sleep apnea treatment plans. And I was just really fascinated. I was like, how the hell are you getting people to do this? This is like really interesting. And he shared the secret with me, which was that he'd read a bunch of books on behavioral science. And that really got me into reading up on it, taking coursework, et cetera. And I quickly recognized that there's a lot of really great research happening right now in academia, all trying to uncover how people make decisions. And, that research is largely stuck in academia. There's, a greater trend towards bringing it and commercializing it for clients. And that's part of, what I'm involved in and really excited with Next Step, because our work is really about figuring out how we can take this great research out of academia and bring it to the real world for our clients and really help them with their marketing and growth efforts. So we work with a number of clients in a variety of industries, a lot of tech companies, because we're based in San Francisco Bay Area. And, we're largely helping them either do, market research or optimizing their marketing and growth efforts using behavioral science.
Yeah. And it's what I find so interesting is, when I'm talking to customers and prospects and even other colleagues, we talk about sharing our customer stories. Everyone's always really afraid of kind of giving away the secret sauce. And what I think is the secret sauce is tapping into this behavioral science, really understanding the why behind people's decisions and how to leverage it in an ethical manner, right? Yeah. But let's talk about what behavioral science is. What is it?
Yeah. So definitely a bit of a buzzword.
Yeah, exactly. Don't give me like the clinical. I definitely want it to be digestible so people walk away with understanding.
Of course. So simply put, it's the study of how people really make decisions. And we like to emphasize that word really, because you also have a field of study that we're all familiar with, which is just standard economic theory that looks at how people make decisions. And I think the comparison between standard economic theory versus behavioral science or behavioral economics, and by the way, I'll just use these terms interchangeably, is really important. Because in economic theory, we assume that people are always rational and we're decision optimizers. And in behavioral science or behavioral economics, we recognize that people's emotions, our environment, whether a digital environment or a physical environment, social factors, our culture, et cetera, all of these other things are influencing how people make decisions. And we basically believe that people are not always rational. And I think if you've interacted with the human race for more than 2 minutes, hopefully it should come as no surprise that there's a big gap between what we say we want to do and what we actually end up doing. So I'll say I want to wake up really early and work out, yet how many of us kind of hit the snooze button because we were binge watching Netflix last night? So I think
an extra bottle of wine or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. So I think behavioral science is particularly good in filling that gap between what people say they want to do and what they actually do. And it's like really about figuring out how do you nudge people towards that outcome that you want.
Perfect. I almost feel like I need to bring my husband in so that he can get a better understanding of it as well.
Yeah. Trust me. My husband and I joke a lot about who's going to take the garbage out because we're constantly using our behavioral science to fix on each other. It works out quite well. You're way better at taking the garbage out.
Let me tell you why. You're going to bring me a lot of joy from this.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, what are the principles that kind of fold into behavioral science? I'm sure it's, you know, it's funny because when you Google it, there's the listicle blogs, right? There's, you know, five principles of behavioral science, seven principles. Yeah. How many really are there? And what are the key ones that we should just kind of focus on from a marketing perspective?
Yeah, great question. So there's probably close to over 300 research-backed principles around, again, how people deviate from rationality and so forth. Now, the good news is that we're all humans. So as I explain this stuff, it like starts feeling very eerily uncomfortable because you're like, oh, shoot, that's exactly how I do it. So there's going to be some that are super familiar, like the fact that as humans, we have a really hard time making decisions in vacuum. So that's why we go shoe shopping and car shopping and house shopping. And in behavioral science, we call this relativity. So this idea that recognizing that your consumer is making choices many times in a relative sense, and how do you kind of bring in that frame of giving them the ability to compare. Another one that's really creeped into the marketing world is storytelling. In behavioral science, we call it narrative bias, and this idea that as humans, we've basically evolved to remember stories much better than facts and figures. So there's definitely some of it that's like, you know, super common. And there's going to be all others that just have fancy names. So there's like the endowment effect, which is this idea that as humans, we basically tend to overvalue something that we own. So that's why we have a really hard time parting with our homes and our cars, because we're like, it's worth a lot more than, you know, what the market's really willing to pay. There's, you know, certain concepts that are, you know, have really creeped into our the marketing world and just our world in general, and then other ones that are less known, so to speak.
I wanted to dig into just kind of the couple of principles that you mentioned, because what I always really like to tie anything that we talk about, even influencer marketing, what I try to tie it back to is where it lands on the marketing funnel. And I wanted to get a better understanding of, as far as the principles go, do you sprinkle the different types of principles throughout that marketing funnel, right? Because where you're telling me about storytelling, you know, from the narrative side, to me, I kind of want to tie it back to, okay, that's brand awareness, that's top of funnel, right? Tell me who you are, tell me what your brand is. And relativity based on comparison is like, okay, now I know who you are. I've heard what your story is. That's middle of the funnel. Now, who else does what you do? I mean, are there principles for every part of the marketing funnel, essentially?
I love this frame that you're thinking about it. It's quite clever. I've actually never thought about it in that sense, but as you're speaking to it, it does really make a lot of sense, because there's going to be certain principles that make more sense. I would say the way we think about it, and especially say in the context of like, let's say an e-commerce website or something where, you know, you're trying to get the user to actually do something. There's a framework that we use, and I'll explain the framework, and then I'll explain where the behavioral science principles come into play at what point. So this framework is called the 3B framework. We got it from our friends at Common Sense Lab, and it stands for define the key behavior, which is what exactly do you want your user to do? So example, in an e-commerce site, it could be, I want people to go in and purchase this, you know, tier product that we have. And the idea with that is that you want to get pretty uncomfortably specific about, you know, what you want people to do. Then you basically, what you want to do is remove any barriers that that user has towards adopting that key behavior. And so basically think of it as like removing friction and kind of greasing the way for that behavior to happen. So in that context, the principles that we tend to use the most is, first of all, cognitive fluency, which is this really fancy word for keep it simple, stupid. And the idea is that everything from the visual design side, your choice of wording, typography, et cetera, the simpler it is, the easier it is for people to digest. And so that's a way of removing friction from the user. In an e-commerce site, it could be, can you introduce defaults for people? Because as humans, we really particularly hate making decisions. And so when we're given default options of what's the right thing or what are most people doing, we really like that. So those would be some examples of thinking about behavioral science principles that you would use to make it easier. And then the third part of that 3B framework is amplify the benefits. And this is where you're using behavioral science principles to make the benefits of your product and solution more salient and more visible. So as an example, you might use social proof, which is this idea that we look to others and we can kind of dig into this in a little bit. Or you might use, like a different way of framing your solution. So the idea with framing, for example, is that if I were to tell you I've got 80% fat-free yogurt or 20% full of fat yogurt, you're going to probably go with 80% fat-free. Now, in reality, there's literally no difference between those two things. But we are like, oh, yeah, 80% fat-free. It makes us feel good. And so this is an example of figuring out clever ways of, you know, framing, et cetera. So that's kind of the way that we think about where we introduce behavioral science principles to either grease the way, remove friction, make it easier, or make the benefits of your solution more salient for the user.
I'm always amazed that anything that has the word science in it can be so easily related back to just marketing in general, because as you're describing those three things, I'm thinking of just social ads to begin with. And, you know, especially with the holidays coming around, there's on my social feed, right? Like that's, what do you want them to do? You want them to click on your ad, you know, so show some elements of scarcity, like order in time, right? And I click on the button for uncommon gifts. And not only does it show me exactly what I clicked on, but then it shows me other items that could potentially, right, you know, be interesting for me as well. And then there is that final step that you had talked about, which is like order now and get 15% off. Like that's a great example of how it's definitely connected to marketing, which is fascinating. Now, we talked about, I know that we wanted to be able to dig into how we can actually apply it to marketing. And you had some notes on just top ways that you can do that. If we could dig into the application of it, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a couple of different distinct areas that we apply it inside of marketing. The first is market research. So this is typically, I want to better understand the audience. And more from the standpoint of what's motivating their behavior, right? Yeah. So in behavioral science, we're actually less believers of kind of traditional demographic-based segmentation. So for example, if I'm a 60-year-old man or a 20-year-old teenager, fear of losing something is going to be probably the same, as powerful the same way, or we're going to be motivated by social norms probably in similar ways. So It's less the demographic, but more about understanding for your audience pool, what's kind of motivating their behavior in terms of like wanting to adopt your solution or wanting to renew with you, or, you know, a variety of different things. So market research is kind of the first thing. Then the next thing is, as it transitions into your kind of core assets, say your websites, your landing pages, it translates into the messaging that you use, how you structure information. Let's say in an e-commerce site, it could be your sign up and checkout flow that you have for your growth or demand gen. It could be leveraged in terms of optimizing your campaigns. So a lot of times we are working with demand gen teams and basically bringing this behavioral science lens as a way to help them optimize their campaigns, the efficacy of their campaigns, and reduce their costs, you know, customer acquisition costs. And I think the one thing that I want to call out here is that while there are applications for behavioral science in many different sides of marketing, ultimately our framework is one where we're trying to uncover why people are making certain decisions about your brand. And once we've uncovered that, that finding can live in a variety of places in your organization. It could be within different aspects of your marketing. It could go into sales. It could go into the customer experience, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We're less concerned about saying, you know, change the button from green to blue, because that finding is not easily transferable to other things. Yeah. But like, hey, people are much more motivated by a gain frame versus a loss frame in this scenario. That's an insight that you can kind of port over to other aspects of the marketing efforts, sales, product, et cetera.
Let's dig in a little bit more on the gain versus the loss frame. Like that's such a great way to frame it. I'd love to hear an example of that just so that the listeners can really understand the difference, right? Because I think the difference between both is very subtle, but can be very impactful from an emotional stance.
An example is actually something that we toyed with for a client of ours. They sell these things that you can drink that help with hangovers. So their audience is basically people, say, in their 30s and 40s that are, you know, going out and drinking, et cetera, but they don't want to, you know, experience a hangover. So if we were to message what they do in a promotion or gain frame, it could look like something like, hey, with this, you can drink like there's no tomorrow, right? That's a gain frame because you're promoting the idea that I can drink and not suffer the consequences of a hangover. Now, if I want to take this into more of a prevention or a loss, like avoiding losses, shifting the lens on it, it would look something like, don't miss a whole day of productivity.
I like it.
So don't miss a whole day of productivity is preventing the loss of that entire day being stuck in bed with a hangover more salient for someone, as opposed to promoting drinking and not suffering the consequences.
Does one work better or over the other? Or would you say it just really does depend on what your product is, what your motivation is? Or would you even say that this is a good way, this is a good example of an A/B test? Which one resonates better?
Yeah. So definitely test. There's no, I think the one thing I'll say is sometimes our challenge with how people interpret behavioral science is that they see it as like magic fairy dust. And if I sprinkle some, it will magically. So while there are certain principles that work time and time again, and we see them and we don't need to like run research or A/B test or experiment on it, generally speaking, when you're getting into some of this more advanced principles, you always want to test it because humans are complicated. There might be other factors going on. And so you really generally want to do proper testing to see, you know, what frame works better, what principle works better, et cetera.
Now, I do want to go back to one of the things that you had mentioned previously, which is social proof. And I think that's a really great tie-in when it comes to influencer marketing. Break it down. What is social proof? What is it that we mean by that? And how is that connected to influencers?
Yeah. So social proof is this idea that as humans, we're basically pretty motivated by how others are behaving or acting. And just to kind of help visualize it in your brain, think of it, if you were going to go to a restaurant and there were two restaurants side by side on your block, one has a big long line outside of it, the other one, there's not a single person outside the restaurant, I should say now, but because of COVID, because nobody's inside the restaurant, then you're most likely to go stand in line. So that's a perfect example of you being motivated by social proof, what other people are doing, because you have no idea technically if the food in one is better than the other. You're literally judging based on what other people standing in line are doing. So there's actually different types of social proof that motivates humans. There's peer social proof, which is this idea that people that are closest to me in terms of circumstance and condition. So think of it this way. If you were going to go, find a new, say, dermatologist or somebody to do your will or whatnot, you're more likely to go to your peers, to your friends, to people that are the most similar to ask for advice. And so we typically see a lot of like peer social proof in marketing in general. So it's basically testimonials and all that good stuff from people the most similar to our audience. Then you have expert social proof. And the idea with expert social proof is people that I want to be. They're not my peers, but I aspire to be. And I think, for example, what Grin does and like a lot of the foundation of what you guys do with influencers, that's a perfect example of leveraging expert social proof, because these are influencers, they have a lot of followers, it's possible somebody that I want to potentially aspire to. If you look at, you know, all the sports ads, et cetera, that, you know, feature the athletes, et cetera, these are all perfect examples of expert social proof. And then another type of social proof is called number social proof. And this is the idea that I'm going to just show you that there's a sheer number of people doing this. So think of McDonald's, billions and billions of people served, et cetera. And so a lot of times when you are in a situation where you can't use peer social proof or expert social proof, you just want to show that, hey, there's a lot of people doing this and therefore you should do it. And then finally, there's a type of social proof that you definitely don't want to be using, which is called negative social proof. And what not to do. Exactly. So this is the inadvertently one. So like, let's say in an e-commerce site, like for example, Amazon obviously does a really good job with all their reviews that they do. Now, negative social proof is like if you come and you put like the ability for people to do reviews on your site, but then you have like one or two reviews that are, you know, potentially negative or not a lot. So it's actually literally hurting your cause because it's showing that there aren't a lot of people like me doing this. So that's something to, you know, be on the lookout for.
Yeah. What I also think is really fascinating, especially in this time, is, you know, we're going through a pandemic and we've definitely seen, you know, the dip and then the rise to people adapting to sort of what this new normal is. And we are seeing that huge shift from, you know, brick and mortar to e-commerce, right? It definitely, it made everybody move towards digital so much faster. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on just kind of what marketing efforts can really help during this. Well, I'm sure it's here to stay. I mean, people are going to stay in digital because it does make things a lot more accessible. But do you have just some feedback and thoughts on, you know, just some, I don't want to say best practices, but things that marketers can really take into account because of like what is going on with COVID-19?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we look at it from people's mindset, I would say, you know, COVID-19 and largely this kind of uncertainty that we have as a result of it, like our lives are uncertain. They were probably a lot more uncertain and they're going to be, you know, again, with lockdowns and whatnot. That to me is kind of the common theme of thinking about how do people operate and behave during times of uncertainty. So there's a couple of different things that we like to think about in terms of kind of combating this uncertainty. So I think the first thing is a lot of times we go into this scarcity mode where we're afraid.
And now I feel like it's happening all over again. I just went to Target and it's all clear. I'm like, one package.
So basically, there's actually a lot of research that shows that people's IQs drop when as much as 13 points when we are in this state of being confronted with scarcity. And so some of the things that you want to think about from your consumer's mindset is, number one, keeping it simple. So people's attention span is going to be that much more limited. And so really taking another brush through your marketing efforts, and from that lens of how simple have we made this for people? How easy is it for them to grasp it? Because think of our lives and how much more complicated they are. You know, a lot of us working from home and kids and, you know, multiple responsibilities, et cetera. The other thing that happens to us in terms of this, when we operate in this times of uncertainty, is as humans, we're really, really bad about thinking about our future selves. So this is why we have a really hard time saving for retirement and, you know, doing, you know, climate change is such a challenge, et cetera. And so when we're in these times of uncertainty, our ability to think about our future selves and kind of long-term thinking actually gets even that much more constricted. So we become hyper-focused on the present and now. And I think the lens that you want to think about it is, if your mindset of your user is very short-term focused and you have a product or solution that benefits them in the long-term, that's going to be a challenge, right? And so thinking about how can you deliver, how can your solution deliver more short-term benefit, or how can you frame your solution for a short-term benefit, I think is particularly important. The other thing that you were saying, actually, which when we were talking about the gain frame or the loss frame, is that a lot of times we see people in times of uncertainty shift from being motivated by a gain frame to actually be more of a in a prevention and loss frame. It might have been that, like, you know, in 2018, you could promote your things based on like, hey, these are all the benefits that you can gain by using our solution, et cetera. But because people are in this mindset of uncertainty, all they're trying to do is prevent further losses. And so loss frame messaging and prevention based messaging, it's possible that it's going to actually work better for your audience. And that's something that you want to kind of think about, Tess. Another thing that you want to think about is, how can you just radically de-risk adoption? Because again, mindset of the user, I can't think about my long-term as much. I'm thinking short-term. So can you offer free trials? Can you create like foot in the door solutions? Can you, leverage reciprocity to just make it that much easier for them to want to adopt your solution? And then ultimately, seeing if you can reduce that uncertainty by giving people this idea that they have more control and flexibility around your solution. So if it's, you know, a very big commitment, can you chunk it down into smaller, you know, things? Can you give them the ability to change course, you know, not, you know, be married into like a long-term solution or subscription with you, or et cetera. So really giving them this idea that they have the ability to change course as they see fit. Because again, they can't think about their future selves.
So helpful. And we'll end up breaking this down in a post podcast Q&A so that people can really walk away with these chunks and the importance of behavioral science, like to any kind of marketing initiative. But if you could tie it back to like, do you have some critical points that are really beneficial from a behavioral science perspective to e-commerce specifically?
I think particularly with e-commerce brand, there is most of the time, a very clear, succinct key behavior that we want the user to do, which is usually purchase our product or solution. And so going back to thinking about how do you make it easier by removing the barriers, introducing defaults, removing friction from that process, and then what are the ways that you can amplify the benefits of your solution by using concepts like social proof, by reframing, your solution and, you know, offering guarantees and things of that nature is some of the ways that you can kind of make them a bit more salient for them.
And, you know, well, I've taken way more time than I had intended to, but I do have one last question with you. It's, you know, this is going to be airing before the end of the year. So I'd love to hear what your predictions are for 2021 for marketers from your perspective.
So I think I definitely feel like there's going to be kind of two themes. So one is this need to rebuild connection and emotional appeal to our brands, because I think, you know, we've largely been in this very like disconnected world because of COVID. And so really thinking about how can you rebuild those, you know, the emotional connection to your brand and create connection for people with your brand is something that I think marketers will, you know, continue to need to work on and grapple with. And then I think ultimately, because we're, you know, obviously seeing this digital transformation happening, I think the good news with that is that it is forcing us as marketeers to really approach marketing much more from a data-driven, rigorous, you know, quantify the results way, as opposed to what we call kind of the madman approach of like sprinkle the fairy dust and see what happens. So I'm actually particularly excited because it does take us in a direction where I feel like we're more like engineering growth, you know, we're more, much more like growth engineers than before. So.
It's interesting because I'm totally writing notes as we're talking. I just find it so incredibly fascinating. I can't thank you enough for coming on and just kind of sharing your insights and really making behavioral science digestible and relatable. I love the fact that you have analogies for everything for me who can get very, you know, in my head about certain things. You did just such a great job for us in really breaking it down and making it relatable. So thank you so much.
Of course, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. And it was always fun to chat with you and, I welcome future conversations.
During this episode, Sharon talks us through behavioral science and how to leverage it to help our marketing objectives. She breaks down the just do's of behavioral science for e-commerce brands, which are defining key behaviors, removing barriers, and amplifying benefits. And we really dig into the different types of social proof that are most relevant and how influencers fit into that social proof. She provides great analogies to make science into relatable and actionable tips for any marketing campaign. Want more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast on iTunes or Spotify to get the latest episodes. And share your thoughts and leave a review to keep growing our Grin Gets Real community. For more information on Grin, visit our website at grin.co. Until next time, keep grinning.